Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is your host Jasper, Kareem Saeed is here, and on this episode we'll be smelting Real Steel, a quasi-futuristic sports drama in which Hugh Jackman plays a total asshole who learns about the power of love or some shit. Oh, and sometimes robots punch each other.
Kitty's on our side.
Not funny.
Kind of funny.
You know he has voice recognition, right?
No, he doesn't.
No, he didn't in the league.
But when Noisy fought in Brazil, I must have put it in. Right, left, uppercut. Doesn't work. Right, left, uppercut. I knew that price was too good to be true.
Give me
a second.
Let me see if I can fix it.
Look at God. Look how good he looks, too.
Give me 2 seconds. Damn. Let me look at something.
Why didn't you ask the guy to have a look at him?
Miggy, he died.
Oh, what was that? Is that Japanese?
Apokato Nikai.
Let me see if I can reset him to English.
How the hell do you know Japanese?
Video games.
So, Kareem, are you so excited that in a few years from this very day, robot boxing will take the world by storm?
I can't wait. I've already bedazzled my jean jacket for when I go.
Oh, what pattern of bedazzlement did you give your jean jacket?
I spelled out Real Steelier on it.
Because you have even more steel than the movie Real Steel?
Exactly.
Basically, we're just alleging this is a document from the future that has come to us.
I've already accepted it into the canon of my life story.
Wow.
That's how excited I am about this future.
You're really working hard to get your quote on a movie poster.
I am. When this goes to DVD, I want to be on the box.
I don't think that they're going to get much better than I want this movie's title bedazzled on my jean jacket.
That's about as high praise as this movie can hope for.
Yeah, it's a jean jacket bedazzlement kind of movie.
Yeah.
Not even bedazzling, but like probably the knockoff bedazzler that they sell at the store that's advertised as a dollar store, but you go in and there are things that are like $5. Basically, Five Below is where they would sell the bedazzler that you would use to adorn this movie's title onto your jean jacket.
Yeah, it's called the Rejazzler.
That sounds like some procedure that women who have a lot of money do to their vaginas.
Exactly.
It seems as though we don't really want to talk about Real Steel. Could it be because it was a pretty drab movie?
Yeah. There was a lot of just what I just did right now, a lot of that heavy sighing throughout that movie.
There was a lot of heavy sighing and a lot of, like, forehead slapping. We became Foley artists for that 2 hours and 7 minutes.
We really did.
Before we pick this movie apart, I want to talk about the future world of Real Steel. I honestly don't really think that during the course of the movie they specify exactly what year Real Steel is supposed to take place in. I've read some reviews that indicate that it's 2020, which maybe is established in like the press notes that the critics got or something. If they ever mentioned it in the movie, maybe that was a moment where my brain was occupied because it was telling my eyes to roll, so I didn't hear the voice saying that it was 2020. But let's say that, just for shits and giggles, this movie takes place in 2020. I honestly do not want to start off really complimenting this movie. I want to kind of get right into the scorn part. But if I was going to pay this movie a compliment, I would say that I kind of liked how its version of the future is not too different from what we have now. The three things that I noticed that were really different were the cell phones and GPS devices were like transparent screens.
They look like they're not really good for storing in your pocket.
If you sat down, you would snap it in half, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I also noticed that the punk rockers are grungier than they are now.
A little bit.
And the last thing that I noticed that was different was that the ladies at wrestling matches and stuff who, like, carry the cards around announcing what round the match is in 2020, they look like the Borg Queen.
Yes, they made them up to look like human robots.
Yeah, and speaking of human robots, I would say that's a good jumping off point to talk about this movie's source material, because this movie is adapted from a Richard Matheson story that was written in 1956. That story was actually adapted to an episode of The Twilight Zone in 1963. Richard Matheson did that adaptation himself. I kind of remember that episode of The Twilight Zone, and from what I remember, it was the story of like a future where robots boxed, But this guy, he had a broken robot boxer. So he actually used makeup to pretend to be his own robot boxer, and he fought another robot himself.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I just kind of had wished that was the tack that this movie took, because it would have been really funny to see, like, Hugh Jackman put a bunch of cardboard boxes on himself and, like, spray paint them, and then go into the ring with this, like, computer-generated robot, and, like, he would fight the robot. That'd be pretty funny, right?
Yeah, kind of like a modern twist on the John Henry story.
Wow, you really reached for that one. So yeah, there's a lot that's different from the source material to this. This is like exactly what you would expect from the kind of Hollywoodization of the source material. There are worse things, I guess. I mean, this movie is not a total bust. Would you agree with me or would you disagree with me? Ooh.
I will try to spend some time coming up with what I could consider redeeming qualities.
Okay.
At this moment, I have none.
I think that there's just a base level of competence to the filmmaking of this movie. You know, it's sort of a logical plot. Scenes happen after other scenes in a way that makes sense. There is sort of a flow to the movie. It's, you know, it's assembled well. It's just kind of what is being assembled that is really stupid.
Okay, I'll agree to that. Yeah. There weren't any really bad goofs in terms of, like, they should have put that scene before that other scene.
Yes, the scenes were in order.
Yeah, if you want to consider that a redeeming quality, I'll sign off on it.
When Real Steel comes out on DVD and Blu-ray, underneath your quote about it inspiring you to bedazzle your jean jacket, it's going to say my quote, which would be like, the scenes were in order. Let's talk about the first scenes of this movie, which are really sort of get things off to a bad start, I would say. Hugh Jackman is introduced. His character is this robot fighting promoter. It's, you know, the near future where human boxing is outlawed.
I think that later on in the movie, they mention that it starts to become more and more violent because the audience has, like, this unsatiable bloodlust.
Yeah.
And so they replace the humans with robots, and then the robots eventually get bigger, and you end up where we are in the near future with Hugh Jackman as a drunkard.
A drunkard who takes one sip of beer one morning, like when he gets up, there's like a half-drunk beer bottle on the side of the counter near his bed or whatever, and he picks it up and he drinks it, and you're thinking, okay, so he's got a drinking problem. Never brought up again.
No. He's the most tempered alcoholic I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's just kind of a douchebag, really.
Yeah.
The first thing I want to say about this movie that just made me right away feel like his character is completely toxic is that he is at a county fair, and apparently one of the attractions at this county fair is seeing a gigantic several-ton robot beat up a bull.
An actual bull, not a robot bull.
Yeah, like a real human bull.
A human bull.
They have hybrids in the future. But yeah, there's a sequence where he takes this robot, and the robot's name is Ambush, because all of these robots have, like, cool Hasbro names, like names that you would call a Transformer. And
right.
He unleashes it in a pit to fight this bull at this county fair. And the people there are not horrified, which means they are all awful, because this robot is, like, punching the bull in the face.
Right, and lifting it and throwing it around.
So apparently the bloodlust of humanity got too insatiable, so they had to outlaw human boxing. But I guess nobody gives a shit about the animals. Like, where is the SPCA in this future?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure. I would like a 2-hour-long movie that discusses the policy decisions that had to be made regarding robot boxing.
We get a very brief history of it later on. Hugh Jackman sort of provides a little bit of background information, but the problem with that is that he's providing it to a character who already knows about robot boxing. I mean, everybody apparently knows about robot boxing in 2020 because it's a popular thing, so he can't really go into the length that the audience sort of needs because this character already knows the history. It wouldn't make sense for him to stop and give a lesson to somebody who already knows the ins and outs of robot boxing. But I would say that probably the only time in this movie that I cheered was in that first sequence when the tables do turn and the bull ends up sort of demolishing the robot.
Yeah, it gores off its leg and arm with its horn.
I think that was kind of it for me as far as great sequences in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even necessarily convinced that that was a great one.
Well, no, but it definitely was satisfying in terms of what we had just watched, like in the couple minutes that came before that moment.
I agree.
I feel like this might be one of the rare cases where Hugh Jackman is playing a character that just sort of wastes everything that he has to offer in terms of his charisma. I mean, he's a pretty charismatic guy. I definitely like seeing him in movies. I think that he brings a lot to the table. He's very easily likable. But this probably would be the first movie, I would say, where this is just such a gross, toxic character. I keep on saying the word toxic a lot, but I just want to underscore that I really mean this guy is gross and toxic.
He is both, and he's horrible to every other character in the movie. Do you really feel like there was a real redemption for him at the end?
No, not really.
He starts off as a jerk, and the movie ends with him still pretty much as a jerk.
Yeah.
And then he does a whole bunch of jerky stuff in the middle, too, so.
I never really felt like he was anybody that I was interested in rooting for. It's very, like, I think neatly laid out that this is supposed to be, like, a redemption story.
Right.
And I just never felt the redemption.
It was supposed to be that Sylvester Stallone arm wrestling movie, but instead of arm wrestling, it's robot boxers.
Over the top?
Yes. Pretty much the exact same plot, where he had a kid with a lady, the lady is sick and dies, and so he has to take care of the kid over the summer, and along the way, as they're trucking across the United States, the kid is introduced to the seedy underground world of professional arm wrestling. There's like a bar arm wrestling, and there are similar kind of environments in Real Steel that you can draw direct comparisons to over the top. There's kind of like a backyard arm wrestling scene, and there's a bar arm wrestling scene, and then at the very end there's this very high profile professional arm wrestling scene.
Double feature.
Real Steel and Over the Top.
Yeah. Let's talk about the kid character. Dakota Goya, who played Baby Thor.
Right.
Hugh Jackman finds out that the woman that he had this kid with dies off screen, and he is given the child. Hope Davis plays his sister?
I think plays his former girlfriend's sister, the mother of the kid.
He finds out that he has custody of this kid now, and the aunt wants to take him because she's very wealthy. She's married to a very rich guy. Hugh Jackman actually pulls this stunt during the custody hearing. He wants a certain amount of money from the aunt. What is it? It's $100,000, right?
Right. Yeah. He tries to scam them for $100,000.
It would be funnier if it was $100.
I'll give you this kid for a sawbuck.
Nice Brindad Dixon reference.
Thanks. You know, I try to throw him in from time to time.
You're keeping the kids happy.
Exactly.
But yeah, he actually pulls this stunt during the custody hearing where when she balks at the amount of money that he asks for, he pretends to call like an orphanage in front of her and be like, yeah, I'm going to drop him off in a half hour.
Right.
So class act. Although, honestly, when we get to know this kid, I probably would have dropped him off at an orphanage too. He's one of those movie kids where it's just sort of a miscalculation on the part of the writers, I think, and the director of how this child actor is made to act, but the pluck is turned up to, like, 11.
Yeah, there's something wrong with the character. It's not a well-written character, or maybe it's just not a well-cast character. I don't really know, but there's something off.
This whole movie is sort of a miscalculation of character. Hugh Jackman accepts the money, but the problem is that the aunt and uncle are going off to Europe for a vacation that they just simply, you know, can't change. So they need Hugh Jackman to take care of him for a couple months while they're gone.
Right.
So off we go with these two characters. I didn't like either of them. And we meet a third character.
Who I'm also unlikable.
Yes. Evangeline Lilly from Lost plays Hugh Jackman's flame girlfriend, on-again, off-again crush. They have a very strange romantic history. She is a woman who owns a gym.
She has inherited her father's former boxing gym.
Her gym is in trouble. She, however, is committed to making such bad decisions throughout the movie that it's not really, like, that much of a stretch. Like, you kind of understand, the more you get to know this character, why she's in such bad shape. My favorite scenes in this movie, if I can use the word favorite ironically, are scenes where Evangeline Lilly talks to Hugh Jackman. I think you might know why this is, but I'm going to tell our listeners it's because she manages to work Hugh Jackman's character's name, which is Charlie, into everything that she says. Like, every sentence has at least one use of Charlie. I feel like occasionally she manages to get, like, three Charlies in.
It would make for a fun drinking game if I was a drinker.
basically, we're just thrown together with these three characters, none of whom are good, none of whom are likable, all of whom are pretty aggravating. And, you know, they become sort of a surrogate family as Hugh Jackman and Dakota Goyo navigate the waters of the underground robot fighting. Well, also the above-ground robot fighting. The weird thing about the robot fighting in this movie, the robot boxing, is that at the same time it seems to be something that is, you know, really popular entertainment embraced by the mass audience, it also seems to be some kind of, like, underground cult thing in other scenes.
It definitely follows this trend, I think, of, like, real-life professional wrestling, where there is this very real professional arena where there's a whole lot of ceremony and a whole lot of publicity and whatnot, but then there are crazy people who just also do it in their backyards.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's people in between who will lend their CD bar to Friday night fights or whatever, so...
Did this seem like something to you that would be popular, in all honesty?
No. I mean, I don't know. I don't like professional wrestling either, so...
But at least with professional wrestling and professional boxing, there is the drama inherent in seeing two people beat the shit out of each other. I was never convinced that this would be as popular as the movie claims that it would be. I feel like if they had robot wrestling in reality, like right now, it would be something that would be really hot for maybe like a year and a half, 2 years tops. And then people would kind of stop caring about it.
Funnily, actually, on the tech channel a long time ago, they used to have BattleBots.
I remember BattleBots.
Yeah, which was a show where people would make little tiny remote-controlled robots that fought each other. And I think after, like, the first season, people caught on that the most effective design was just, like, a triangle with really powerful wheels on it. And it would just drive straight at other robots and cause them to flip over. It lost popularity, like, really quickly. Nobody really cared about BattleBots much after that.
And I definitely remember that in BattleBots, the robots had sort of, like, their own personalities, in the sense that one of them had, like, a buzzsaw on top, one of them had, like, a hammer that would go back and forth. I mean, these robots are just basically, like, Rock'em Sock'em robots, for lack of a better term. They all sort of look the same. There's not a whole lot of difference between them. Some of them are different colors. Some of them have, like, mohawks. But essentially, yeah, it's the same design. I just don't really see what would be that appealing about watching these two shapes that look very similar to each other just beat each other until one of them has wires that fray and causes them to, like, leak oil or crumble into pieces or whatever.
I'll say this too, and this kind of points to my biggest issue with the movie in general, was that the robots are just generally very unimpressive.
Do you mean that in terms of their design in the movie, or do you mean in terms of the special effect that's presented to the viewing audience?
Both.
I would agree with you, honestly. I was not really bowled over by these special effects.
Especially in light of movies like Transformers, you can't make a robot movie with half-assed robots, because what's the point?
I think one of the meanest things I could say about this movie, in fact, is that this movie made me want to watch a Transformers movie. Just because at least those movies more or less embrace their nuttiness, thanks to, you know, Michael Bay being insane. And the special effects are a lot better. I distinctly remember the first time we actually do see two robots fighting is a sequence where they're sort of like at an underground fight run by Anthony Mackie from The Hurt Locker. Hugh Jackman buys this robot from Japan called Noisy Boy. I want to see, he's like a giant purple robot. I think he has an orange mohawk. He has these crazy Japanese characters painted on him, and he's fighting another robot that Megatron's brother, I don't know what the robot was named, but they're fighting at this underground fight, and it's just generally not impressive at all. So Hugh Jackman has spent all of his money that he got from selling his child on this Noisy Boy robot, who is promptly dismantled not too far into this underground fight that we're talking about. His kid, who is a gigantic fan of robot boxing, wants to put together a robot out of, like, different scraps. So they break into a junkyard, and there's, like, a drop-off in the junkyard, and his son slips and slides down, and he almost falls in a ravine, but the thing that catches him is this, like, extended robot arm sticking out of the rubble. And it turns out it's a second-generation sparring bot from the year 2014, and its name is Atom. The design of this thing sort of reminded me of, like, if they let Tim Burton make the Transformers movies instead of Michael Bay.
Yeah.
This is what Tim Burton's idea of, like, a robot is. Like, it's got sort of these two blue glowing eyes, and that's sort of it as far as the facial features go. And they're located under, like, a mesh covering that makes up most of the face. And the thing that I guess stuck out to me to be Tim Burton-y was the fact that the mouth and nose don't exist, but there's sort of like a dent or something on the mesh frame of the face that sort of makes it look like stitching. So it looks like there's, like, a line going down the face that's stitched and a line going across the face that's stitched, and together those sort of form the other facial features inadvertently, I think. But that really just seemed very Tim Burton to me.
I guess Adam kind of had a little bit of a nine look to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
The kid pulls him up out of this junkyard. They take him back to Evangeline Lilly's gym. They wash him off. They give him a new power source, I think. There's some techno jargon there that I just didn't really care about. And right. He comes to life, and the kid takes him out in the city at night, and together they do really nice destructive things to the neighborhood, like knock over trash cans, I think break a fire hydrant maybe. They destroy some public property together, and then there's a very, very bizarre scene where, like, the kid faces the robot, and the robot, I think, picks him up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they share this moment where they're looking into each other's eyes, and I seriously thought that he was just going to start making out with the robot.
I was nervous that that might be the way they went with it.
He's an attractive robot.
I mean, he's a looker.
As far as second-generation sparring robots made in 2014 go, yeah, I would make out with him.
I can't say that I've seen a better one.
Now, do you think that Adam is supposed to be a robot that you're supposed to feel something for?
They kind of went back and forth, I think, with whether they wanted us to believe that there was something more than just programming underneath Adam's exterior. Like that scene where he picks up the kid, I think they really are pushing to have you think that Adam's got some kind of a soul and you're supposed to pull for him on a human level.
Yeah.
Later on, there are these shots where you're just kind of thinking, oh, actually, he's just a dumb robot. I'm not sure.
Hugh Jackman and his son start taking Adam on the road. They clean him up. They train him, even though I don't really understand the basis of training a robot, because it seems like it would be all programming, right?
Right. You'd think you would teach it to do something once, and then it would be good. But there seems to be this notion of you have to exercise your robot.
There's definitely a scene where Hugh Jackman is wearing jogging pants and they're standing in, like, the front area of a motel, and he's, like, shadowboxing with him.
The most mystifying thing about that scene was that he has the robot do, like, warm-up moves. Like, as if the robot needs to loosen up before it starts its workout.
Yeah, well, it's a second-generation sparring bot, so the joints are a little bit rusty. There's kind of a bizarre sequence where the robot is on the road with them. They start arranging fights. This robot starts winning fights. And eventually the robot is courted by the owners of another robot named Zeus. And Zeus is, like, supposed to be, I guess, one of the primary antagonists of this movie, as far as, like, completely emotionless robots that are not, you know, sentient beings are. But he's owned by this Russian woman and this Japanese guy. And they're just, like, non-American villains. Like, there's nothing interesting about them at all. Hugh Jackman and his son are at a fight, and they're allowed to go up to, like, the penthouse suite where the Russian and the Japanese guy are staying, and they make him an offer. They want to buy Adam from him. And when they leave Adam alone in the room to go meet with these people, there's just a completely befuddling moment where Adam sort of turns on his own and looks into a mirror and cocks his head and stares at his reflection, and they hold on that shot for a few seconds. I really thought that we were going to find out that Adam can speak, and the first lines of dialogue that we would hear come out of his Tim Burton scar mouth would be, "Who am I?
Why am I here?"
Yeah, it's really weird, because throughout the movie I'm not really sure who's controlling these robots or how much they need to be controlled. I mean, they established kind of early on that this robot doesn't really do a whole lot without shadowing someone else.
Right.
So how is it able that this robot can, like, have a moment of self-realization when nobody else is in the room?
I was hoping that they were going to flesh out some kind of weird father-son relationship for Zeus and Adam. And then at that moment, we'd get, like, a flashback scene of, you know, a young Adam being scorned by his father, Zeus, for not being strong enough to fight with the other robots or something.
But they don't really talk, so it's all, like, gears sounding, and then we would get, like, subtitles.
Exactly. It's just a series of beeps and...
Yeah, I just don't feel like that anyone ever tried to make these robots actual characters, which makes all the robot fights sort of pointless. I mean, there's just no stake in them. I didn't care about the human characters, and I'm certainly not going to care about the robot characters who they're not even trying to make you care about.
That's an especially good argument when you consider that the bad people in the movie, ostensibly the owners of Zeus, are completely glossed over in terms of character development. Like, they don't even really bother to give you any background on these people whatsoever.
Yeah, they're very, very one note. The Japanese guy is smug, and the Russian lady is Russian.
Right.
She has that kind of upsweep, pulled back hairdo where you just like immediately when she walks on the screen in her designer dress and her really expensive haircut, you're like, okay, she's a bitch. And that's pretty much all. That's it. That's all that there is.
Right. And she actually steals the line from Rocky V that Bridget Nielsen has. So in that movie, Rocky fights this Russian boxer, and the Russian boxer's Russian wife has the swept back hair and the fancy dress, and she makes a comment like, whatever my husband hit, he destroys. And that exact same line is in this movie, oh. But they're talking about the robot boxer.
It must be pretty bad if your screenplay is aping lines from the fourth Rocky sequel.
Yeah, exactly. Have we talked about how ridiculous Hugh Jackman looks when he's physically shadowboxing and controlling the robot?
I started to really look at Hugh Jackman's jogging pants. He looks ridiculous in jogging pants. And I sort of had a moment where I was like, do I look ridiculous in jogging pants? Because I feel like if Hugh Jackman can't pull off jogging pants, there's no hope for me.
I wasn't even talking about that scene. I meant at the very end when he's having the final fight. And they realize that Adam's voice control system has been damaged, and so they have to switch him to shadowboxing mode.
Oh, wow. Sorry, you just touched a nerve there, I guess, with me.
No, it's okay. That scene, though, Hugh Jackman has to take over the control of Adam because the voice control system is down, so he's got to shadowbox Zeus. And he's got this giant, goofy smirk on his face the entire time. And he's throwing punches wildly in the air at nothing because he's shadowboxing. And it's just like the most ridiculous looking thing I've ever seen. But it totally gets played off as being like that inspirational final moment in a fight movie.
Sugar Ray Leonard, we should mention, is the one who, I guess, choreographed a lot of this boxing.
Sure to be a piece of trivia a couple years from now.
That's totally a Trivial Pursuit question in the future.
Who choreographed the robot fight scenes in Real Steel?
Yeah, so you're going to win. You're going to impress your friends by listening to Scoring Cast. If only in that way. Another thing I do want to bring up about this movie is the sort of peculiar decision that they make where they have Hugh Jackman's son introduce the robot at all the different fights that they go on by dancing. The robot is a shadow boxer, so he's also a shadow dancer. And the kid dances his way up to the boxing ring, and the robot like mirrors exactly what the kid is doing. The audience eats this up. And my question basically is just that, does the audience that is really into robot boxing seem like the kind of audience that would be like, oh, a dancing kid? How adorable.
I've seen some recent YouTube clips of like what's going on in professional wrestling nowadays, and there's a whole lot of that kind of dancing around, making up stupid rap songs, and there's a whole lot of that type of thing, I guess, going on nowadays. So maybe.
I just feel like Hugh Jackman is the one who comes up with this idea when he sees his son outside with Adam and he's watching the kid dance and he's watching Adam sort of like ape the dance movements. And he's like, this is a great idea. Nobody's ever thought of this before. This is a way to get like the audience on our side. You can dance your way into the ring. The robot will dance too. Nobody's ever done this before. And I'm sitting there thinking, no, like the minute they came up with giant robots that would shadow your movements, that's the first thing they did. The first thing they did was make the robots dance in an asinine way. So you're assigning a grade to Real Steel. What grade is that?
Well, it gets an A for scene order. I think I'm gonna give this D.
I'm going to go a little bit higher than you. I don't think that I had as vehement hate as you did for this movie. I was more just like laughing at it a lot and rolling my eyes at the sentimentality. I'm going to give it a C minus. I feel like I can't give it anything lower than a C minus because I really want a C in my grade because C is the first letter of the word Charlie. And I want to pay homage to Evangeline Lilly's dialogue in this movie since that was for sure the most amusing part of it for me was her overuse of the word Charlie and everything she said.
Yeah.
So I read recently that the studio had already made plans to follow through with a sequel. I just wanted to pitch an idea to the studio really quickly in closing. I would love it if in Real Steel 2, Real Steeler, if Hugh Jackman tried to sell the kid again. So please do that. And thanks for listening to another episode of Scorncast. Remember to visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com. You can comment on our posts or give them a plus one if you have no comments to make. And you can send us an email at scornpop@gmail.com. Unless your name is Charlie. In which case, hold off for like a week because we hit our quota.